Well, for years, we've talked about the world order shifting and changing, the end of the Bretton Woods Agreement. But according to legendary investor Ray Dalio, the shift is over. That break is actually here right now. In a massive new piece that he just published, Dalio released this. He said the following after the 2026 Munich Security Conference, he made it official. He said the post-1945 world order has broken down. We've officially entered what he calls stage six of the big cycle, and we'll talk more about that here in a minute. Now, historically, stage six is the war stage. All signs seem to be pointing to that, certainly in the Middle East. It's the period of great disorder where rules are replaced by raw power, where debt cycles reach their breaking point, and where the global map is completely redrawn. And we're seeing it in the capital wars, the weaponization of the U.S. dollar, saw it in Venezuela, the local breakdown of trust in traditional institutions, traditional banking institutions. But here's the reality. When the world order breaks down, money doesn't disappear, evaporate, it actually moves. And it moves faster than most people can keep up with. I mean, just look what's going on with gold right now. What's happening with silver? Went up to 120, dropped down to like 70. Now it's bounced back up around 90. So people thought, oh, silver's pulling back big time. Not necessarily. So what is happening right now? If you're playing by the stage four or stage five rules, buy and hold, you know, trust your 401k, wait for this recovery, you are going to be left behind. As I've long said, the 401k is one of the worst ways to plan for your retirement. It was never built to stand on its own. It was meant to work in tandem with pension plans. And even the founder of the 401k says there's all sorts of trouble with it. This is why I've invited today Mark Wilburn to join us on the show today. Mark is the president of Neos Capital and the author of Understanding the Matthew Effect, and he is a genius when it comes to understanding markets and trading. Mark isn't just a theorist, he's a market expert with a surgical record of predicting these exact macro shifts. He called the top for Tesla, AMD, Meta. He warned people on taking profits on Bitcoin before the crash when everyone was screaming, hold, hodl. Now we see where Bitcoin is. So we're going to talk about all of that and more today. Mark is diving into the specifics of these trades, how to enter and exit and all of these things. Mark, welcome to the show. Great to see you.
Hey, it's great to be here with you guys. Clayton, I appreciate that. I love the surgical comment. It doesn't always feel that way in the moment, but when you look back in retrospect, it turns out really nice.
Well, you live in this stuff day in and day out. I mean, you teach people how to trade, and you know that's what you do at Neos Capital. But you're watching a real big shift right now with what's happening in this marketplace. And I'm 49 years old. In my lifetime, I've never seen this before. And now we've talked about this, the fall down of the Bretton Woods Agreement, the collapse of this old world order, and a new world order is emerging. Ray Dalio is not being hyperbolic, is he?
I don't think so. When you have someone with his track record of success saying these things, you should really pay attention. And so I find it interesting that one of the most successful hedge fund managers ever at Bridgewater comes in as a historical analyst and starts bringing to light what's happening on a geopolitical scale, because understanding that shows you shifts from not just the geopolitical side, but the economy as well. And so you want to know what's happening and how to position yourself, because with these shifts come uncertainty, but with uncertainty comes opportunity.
What opportunities are you seeing right now? Because for a lot of people watching the U.S. dollar collapsing, it sounds pretty darn scary. I mean, I warned people for years on this show, you know, if your family's future is tied to the U.S. dollar, then you're waiting on a disaster. Like, would you want your family's future tied to the U.S. dollar, you know, gold, silver, et cetera? But where are you seeing like the huge opportunities right now with this shift? And then I want to talk more about this shift, like the mechanics of it.
For sure. Love what you've been telling people. Looking at this as far as like, don't just hold your 401k. Don't let that work for you. That's an outdated vehicle for the time that we're living in. And so with these new shifts, you have to change your strategies for investing. The time of, and you know, you're 49, I'm 44. We probably grew up hearing a lot of the same thing. Save for a rainy day, you'll be fine. Work real hard, take your paychecks, stash it away, you'll be fine. That's not a reality for us anymore. And so diversifying yourself in precious metals, which has been huge. You know, I've been really sounding a trumpet on silver since COVID. It dropped down to 11. We started really heavily investing in that, telling our students to heavily invest in that. And now we're seeing huge dividends on it. Still a fan at this area, just because with uncertainty, you've got to have something historically that has withheld the storm of time. Big fan there, big fan of real estate, but still a big fan of trading and stocks itself. You just have to know what sectors are going to produce for you.
Well, let's talk about
it. It's easy to say the AI sector is going to be there.
Yeah.
The chip manufacturer sector is going to be there. But there's a sector that I think everyone overlooks, which is powering that revolution. And that's one area I look at.
And you go back, I mean, I've growing up, I was surrounded by friends, fathers, and people who were big traders. My father was not. My father was pretty, he was a hardworking man, hardest working person I've ever known in my life. But he was not a trader. He didn't understand the stock market. That was not his bailiwick. You know, he understood real estate. But I was surrounded by friends and some of their family who were millionaires who had gone to Yale, who were stock traders, and they understood how to build wealth by investing in strong American companies and building wealth slowly, methodically, and intelligently. So right now, when you see when Dalio mentions there's the five fronts of this war, tech, trade, capital, geopolitical, and the military, which of these right now do you think is hitting the stock market the hardest right now?
I'm going to have to say the capital wars. We're seeing everything that Trump's been doing with tariffs. I was a proponent of those to start out with, to be honest with you. I like seeing the money come in. I hate taxes. I think it's legalized theft with the IRS, because the government and the way that they've done taxes historically is at best shady to the American people. But using those tariffs to impose on other nations, that is a form of a capital war. And then we're seeing what he's done in Iran, which I think you put a video out there really the other day that was really well, as far as squeezing them financially so they don't have other options. That's dangerous, in my opinion, because if they can do it somewhere else, they could do it here too. And so we're seeing this capital war hit the market. There's a lot of uncertainty that comes with it. If you look back at last April when the tariffs first came out, you saw a huge drop instantly in the market.
Right.
As analysts start seeing it work, the market exploded higher from those lows. Right. Now that the Supreme Court has struck that down, what happens next? And I think that's what everyone's looking for.
So let's unpack that. What do you think is happening next? You're a hardworking man out there with your kids and, you're deploying some capital right now, putting it into the stock market, silver, where are the blind spots? What are you most worried about?
I'll tell you what I'm most excited about first. What I'm most excited about is the opportunity in energy that's coming through, because when you look at big tech, you look at your NVIDIA, AMD, your big chip manufacturers, Taiwan Semiconductors, those guys, in order to power the data centers, in order to power quantum computing, in order to power even crypto, you've got to have a larger reserve of power. I think data centers just hit 7% of all U.S. power. We can't keep that pace and actually lead the way as this presidency is saying we want to, unless we ramp up that power. And the best way to do it, and the cleanest way to do it right now, I believe, is through nuclear. And last year, we saw a huge move in a lot of nuclear companies. We were able to capitalize on that. But I think where the average person fails is they don't understand the age of buy and hold forever is gone. I'm a big proponent of buy and hold, but I buy and hold to specific targets and then take our profits out, waiting for another opportunity to deploy those profits again.
Right. My son keeps asking, I've started teaching him how to trade, and we've got his, Fidelity kids account set up for his IRA. And, so I'm teaching him how to trade, and he just wants to know, when do I, because his accounts are now up significantly, in the different right. stocks that I've taught him to buy, and he's like, well, should I sell? And I'm just, hold on. We will. When do I sell? When do I sell? Do I hold it forever? Do I hold it for? So he keeps asking me that question because he sees the profits in the account, and I have to tell him to be strategic about it, and I'll let him know which accounts and which stocks we're going to sell and take some profits on it. But for, I grew up hearing you buy it and you set it and forget it, like Ron Pope Peel style. You don't even look at it. Don't even look at your 401k. Just like let it grow.
Yeah, and that style has gone away.
Why is that?
There was a recent study that JP Morgan put out, a recent study that 40% of all stocks will drop 70% and not recover beyond a 60% drop from all-time highs.
Wow.
And so you go look at a company like PayPal a few years ago at $200, $250, it's now down at $70. I mean, you have that 70% sell-off. Shopify did this a few years ago. Luckily, it recovered. It has recovered, but who's to say it doesn't drop and then maintain that low? So for me, I look at the purpose of the buy and hold. And I, like you said, with your son, you have the strategic targets. You hold it. And then what? One of the things we teach is when you get a large return on that, especially if it's 100x or 100% return, sell half that position and get your capital money back out to put in your pocket. Have your money, like treat your money as an employee, if you would. Any business owner that has an employee, they assign a certain task to them and they expect that task to be accomplished. We don't treat our money that way. We just say, work on this one job forever. In this economy, it doesn't work. That doesn't work. And so being strategic about those entries and those exits, knowing and understanding where those targets are to take profit off the table, is one of the keys to having lasting success in your trading and in your investing.
U.S. interest payments right now. And I want to circle back on some of the areas where you see the biggest opportunity. Well, you said the biggest opportunity in tech. So before I move on, sorry, I want to talk about some of the biggest blind spots. So NVIDIA, we saw, we got their earnings this week. So people very, very excited about that, but still like seems like the markets are kind of mixed on NVIDIA about that. We're seeing Apple admitting they're having to pay almost like double to buy RAM right now to fulfill their orders for the iPhone. Of course, Nintendo also, same RAM they're using in Switch 2s also now. So are we going to see price increases on like Nintendo Switch 2? Like there's a lot of uncertainty right now because of all of these RAM prices and everyone trying to gobble up as much as they can for the, you know, for AI and these data centers and everything else. So in that sector, you see like nuclear, where are the biggest opportunities? NVIDIA, AMD, a lot of the, you know, maybe chip manufacturers.
Personally, I think chip manufacturers have had the parabolic run that we all look for, where you're trying to make the quicker money. I really like nuclear in a longer term. Like nuclear and data centers, longer term, are some of my favorite trades. SMR is a great example of a ticker symbol.
I was going to ask you for some ticker symbols here. So SMR, what is that?
SMR is NuScale Power Corporation. It had a huge move up last year to around $50 and dropped back down to 13. So it's got its earnings coming up. We want to see how it does, but you've got companies like an SMR, LEU, that have signed government contracts and individual contracts to build nuclear companies. Like Google is looking at building their own nuclear facility to house their AI power. Microsoft is looking at the same thing.
Amazon's building its own nuclear power plants too. These micro nuclear power plants, right? I mean, it's who would have thought? Where would we be? You know, just thinking years ago, the 20-year time frame it took to build a nuclear reactor. Now these companies can do these micro reactors and get them off the ground pretty darn quickly.
They do it very fast, and a really good example of that is NNE, which is Nano Nuclear. I want to say they're the ones who did contract with Amazon. It's either them or SMR, but. All these stocks longer term, as they begin building these out and with updated technology, because you got to remember, you know, when people think nuclear, they think Chernobyl. That was built with 1950s technology.
Right.
And so compared to where we're at today, that's ancient. And so with the new technologies that are coming in, I think there's a lot of opportunity in those specific fields because they are needed to power what the current Mag 7 behemoths your Amazon, Apple, NVIDIA, Google, Microsoft, all those names need.
So you said SMR, and what was the other ticker symbol? NNA?
NNE, as in Echo, and then LEU.
LEU. Okay, I wrote those.
Those are kind of my three top nuclears that I always keep a pulse on. And so they're coming into a really nice zone currently, and they're well off their highs, but they're coming into a nice zone currently where we're looking to start scaling in for another move higher.
Nice. I love that. All right. I've wrote those down. So I'll be doing my due diligence on those a little bit later after we talk today. You got to stay on top of this stuff. I mean, you know, it's really important to be able to monitor these sectors and to, of course, not jump in when you're at this parabolic top and, you know, there's not going to be much move higher, right?
And that's the problem that a lot of retail traders get into. You know, when you're trying to start managing your own accounts, your retirement accounts, et cetera, you see the hype and it's hard not to follow it.
Right.
I had so many people like, should I buy silver here at 110? I'm like, no, you should have bought it at 50. You should have bought it at 20. You should have bought it back here. And it's okay to miss a move. One of the things that we love to tell our students is there's always going to be another opportunity. You just have to be prepared and know what you want to see in order to take advantage of it.
Right. I mean, for instance, just, you know, I've been a big proponent of buying silver, and I still am, still, you know, cost averaging, you know, into it slowly and but surely. But yeah, we bought it around 30, I think, and then sold to take profits when it was around, it was sold a portion, you know, take profits when it was at like a 111. And now it's pulled back and, you know, still going to be acquiring more over the coming years. But anyway, not to talk about my portfolio, but let's talk about the U.S. biggest blind spot. So I asked you, you told me where you saw the biggest opportunities right now. Where do you think are some of the real danger spots right now in the U.S. economy?
Companies at risk from the implementation of AI. Let me give you an example.
Interesting.
A few days ago, Claude came out from Anthropic. Claude came out with an update to read code from ATM. And up to that point, IBM was one of the only companies that could do that. It dropped 13% in a day off an announcement. It's like, hey, here's a normal product announcement from Claude. IBM, it just took a huge portion of their business. And so those types of businesses that have exposure to AI, who thought they were going to be safe, where AI can actually replace them, those are the ones that I'm really nervous about investing.
Interesting. Okay. So maybe some of these old companies that have been around for 100 years that haven't adapted to this new AI reality. Absolutely. Is going to start replacing a big chunk of their core business. So you mentioned IBM. Are there other companies that stand out to you that you might be leery of?
Cisco is one that I'm actively looking at potential short positions in right now. A couple other names, Oracle could be on that list. Some of the chip manufacturers that are not keeping up pace with the bigger MUs, AMDs, TSMs, NVIDIAs, some of those other chip manufacturers, they could either get acquired or just fall to the wayside. And so, again, a lot of people I have found through our teaching, they try to find the cheaper opportunities, not the best opportunities. And looking for those better opportunities is going to be key in this. A stock I really like long-term is actually Tesla. I'm not saying I'm a buyer of it here, but looking at everything that Musk is doing, especially with Grok and XAI and SpaceX all coming together for a potential IPO this year, we also know that they are huge in robotics. In fact, I think they're
rolling out the new Optimus, the new Optimus robot. They just converted their Fremont factory from making Teslas into making Optimus robots. And then, of course, they're going to roll out their autonomous vehicle fleet to take on Waymo.
Right.
You know, at a much larger,
They got a lot going on. And when you have Optimus under the brand of Tesla, what operating an AI system is Musk going to use? Grok. That's under XAI/SpaceX. And so as that IPO comes out, I've got a feeling that Tesla stock is also going to roll out and have a lot of upside potential with it, because as they will be interlocked and intermarried almost, because as one does well, the other will naturally do well, especially with these robots. My only fear of that is I've watched the movie iRobot and grew up on Terminator, and so I'm a little wary of that.
I was just on Tucker's show this week, and he said there will never be a robot in my house. Yeah, that's, I don't know. It's, you know, I grew up watching the Jetsons, where it looked friendly and fun. Someone can fold laundry, but also I also know what the future looks like with Cyberdyne Industries and Terminator. So I'm very concerned about it for sure. That's fascinating. Okay, let's talk about the debt. So, and the U.S. debt, how sustainable and how will this affect like American families and where, you know, putting money aside to try to protect our families and college and putting money down for down payment on a home and interest rates and all of that, when the interest on our debt is now $1 trillion and we're nearing $40 trillion in debt. I mean, I remember in high school, my teacher telling us that we had just like got to like $1 trillion in U.S. debt. And he asked us to wrap our heads around that. And that was mind blowing in 1993. Right. Now, $39 trillion. It's impossible. I don't know how we come back from it.
It's unsustainable. At our current trajectory with what we're currently doing, it's unsustainable. And there has to be a major shift in spending in D.C. Having said that, this is why, circling back to what you mentioned on the 401k, I don't like that vehicle personally for most people. Now, if you're in a company and they match and you're getting the match, I completely understand that. That's free money, right?
Right. So take it.
Go for it.
Yeah.
But if you look at the history of taxes throughout the United States, we are actually in one of the lowest income tax times currently that we've ever experienced. And I know that sounds crazy. And so to kind of give people a history lesson, if I may, which I think is really interesting because Dalio refers to World War II so often, the highest tax bracket in 1940 is if you made over $5 million in 1940 money. That's not adjusted for current average. And your tax was 81%. That continued in 1941. But in 1942, the government played a little trick here. They increased the highest tax bracket to 88%, but they dropped who was the wealthiest American from $5 million to $200,000. They dropped it by $4.8
million. Wow.
And then in 1944, increased that bracket to 94%. So if you're making over $200,000, which again, 1944, that's a lot of money. But if you're making that level of money, you're only keeping 6 cents on the dollar. And who's to say that on a vehicle like a 401k that is tax deferred, you're essentially playing Russian roulette with a government, because they get to come in and say, this is how much tax you owe us on that. Hmm. Currently, you know, let's pretend you have $10 million in your 401k. I think the average American has like 100K, but let's just say you've got 10 million and you're saying, okay, I might be at a 30% tax bracket. I've got 7 million to live on. The government changes that number and says, hey, we're going to tax this 401k at 60%. And now you only have 4 million to live on. That's a problem. But we do have some politicians who have mentioned, like a Nancy Pelosi, they're not really worried about the debt because they have retirement money they have not tapped yet. And they're not talking about their own. They're talking about the U.S. taxpayer. They're talking about me and you.
So is this where they're kind of, we talk about how many, what is it, $44 trillion sitting in retirement accounts right now that the government could start to come after? And this could be a massive, the 401k trap, as I know you called it, right?
Absolutely. And we saw it happen in Cyprus. They actually rolled this out in Cyprus, that if you had over 100K in your bank account, the government literally went in and just took their money, took their citizens' money. This was a few years ago, right? Mm-hmm. Who's to say that doesn't happen here, especially in wartime? And one of the things that Dalio put in that article that, I'd highly encourage people to read is that these, there are extreme measures in war that can change, and there's different instruments that governments will use. He calls these wartime economic controls, and it's rationing, production controls, like what companies can produce and manufacture, price and wage controls, import, export restrictions, and the takeover of central banks. And in World War II, the U.S. used every one of those. And there are wartime regulations that impact assets. Like you can actually close the stock market, and that's the only one the U.S. didn't use. But the U.K., Germany, Japan, they actually did.
Wow.
They can change asset price controls, futures controls, margin limits. I mean, there's all kinds of economic wartime restrictions they have. And who's to say that if we get into this proxy war or a live war with Iran, God forbid, and we start running out of money because our debt is already where it's at, and China starts dumping our debt even more, they're going to have to come up with that money. We've got 44 sitting.
And the Fed, you know, the Fed, of course, is one of the greatest, in my opinion, one of the greatest criminal organizations in world history. And really, the Fed can print money in order to keep us in these wars, but it's not, they can't do it at scale, certainly not at a $44 trillion scale, and they wouldn't be able to do it because we obviously would see runaway inflation and be all sorts of problems if we did that. So these retirement accounts just sitting there is, it's like a little money pot just waiting for the government to come in and swoop it. It's terrifying.
It is, because if I'm sitting here and this is my only means of a retirement hope, how can I best protect that? And to me, it's using another skill set and diversifying outside of that 401k. So instead of putting my max contribution in, scaling that back and then using some of the money that would be going into a 401k to put in other real tangible assets or learning a skill so that I can start multiplying that money a lot more quickly than I would be able to with it just sitting, hoping, and one day maybe it all works out.
But you can tell me, you know, we see mining stocks right now and where things are going with gold and silver. I'm a big advocate, certainly, of owning precious metals. I talk about it often, and I do. I own it myself. But also, as I talk about on this show, I'm a huge proponent of like these junior miners and senior miners who've been actually pulling the minerals out of the ground. And as we had Peter Schiff on the show a few weeks ago, he said, I think it's one of the most undervalued markets right now, one of spaces, because these miners are just, compared to where prices of gold and silver are, their value is way lower from a share price perspective. Right. Do you agree with that? Where do you see in the mining sector right now?
I do agree with that. And I like the battle that we're seeing for these precious metals and these other minerals. Big proponent of USAR. Big proponent of USAR. There's a few more that I could pull up for you. I know USAR is one that we have actively traded over and over and over. The downside of these is the volatility that gets created, because they almost move with news reports that come out of DC.
Right.
So a policy, I know that Trump created the vault.
Project Vault.
Project Vault, right? That sent miners really high. And then everything kind of dropped. And so if you're chasing these moves and you don't know how to strategically enter, you could be left holding a 30, 40, 50% loss, saying and hoping one day it comes back. And most likely the war for minerals that's raging on right now, they probably will, most likely. But also knowing where to take that money out. So when I tell people, Clayton, what's the purpose of putting money in the stock market? For me, it's to multiply that money. Right? A lot of people like the security feeling of having shares of Apple or Coke or Walmart or, you know, any of these consumer defense companies. I like multiplying my money and turning it into hard assets I can touch. And so because of that, as we make money in stock market, we turn around and get real estate with it. We turn around and get gold and silver with it. We do have a nice portfolio, but like you said, with the weakening dollar, I don't want my money just sitting in dollars.
Right.
And so there's other asset classes to implement with these strategies. And I think you do a really good job explaining that to your audience.
Well, I'm a big advocate of this, and this is what I've done personally. You know, we have money in the stock market, and when it's multiplied significantly, we pull it out, take profits, and then I buy gold and silver and buy real estate. I've just bought another property right now that we're renovating right now. So I try to, I like tangible assets, and I like to use the stock market as a vehicle to make that money. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, because, you know, a lot of people ask like, well, how do I do this? You know, or they just sort of jump in and they don't know what they're doing and they don't have the education to do it. And then they crash and burn, and they feel like, well, I'm never going to do that again. And that's what you teach. In fact, I think you're putting on a free summit right now, if I'm not mistaken, right on March 5th. I think I have the dates here. The Freedom Trading Summit. Can you talk about this and maybe how people can jump in and take advantage of that?
Absolutely. So we're going to hold this. We're actually giving people two options. We're going to have it on March 5th and March 7th at 4 p.m. both days. And in that, what we are going to do is break down three of the biggest misconceptions and lies that we've been told as it pertains to investing and to the stock market itself. Growing up, I wasn't taught a lot about trading and investing in the stock market, but I heard, you know, one of the things I heard is it's only for the rich. But the way my mind works, if it's for the rich, I probably need to learn how to do it if I want to be rich one day. And so I started pursuing education in it. And so we're going to break down some of these misconceptions, and then we're going to show people some different strategies they can implement and utilize coming out of there. In fact, one of those strategies, we held one of these back in January. We did an event back in January. We gave some different opportunities and called out some trades absolutely free. We got out of one of those today for a 22% return in 12 days, just from one simple strategy. But like, you know, there's different strategies for different games that you play, right? Like if I want to buy real estate, I first have to figure out what real estate game am I playing? Am I going to wholesale the real estate, fix and flip? Am I going to short-term lease, long-term lease, or am I going to live in it? And there's different strategies for each of that. And there's different strategies for long-term investing, what we call swing trading, where you're in and out within a few weeks, or even day trading, which this morning we did, and we caught a 40-point drop in the market. So it was huge. We had people making five figures in 30 minutes.
Jeez.
This morning. So having said that, coming to this event, you are going to get a really solid education where if you've never looked at a stock chart, you'll walk away knowing exactly what to see, what to look for, and a pattern that could potentially make you money moving forward. If you've got experience, there's going to be some nuances there that will really take your investing and trading game to the next level.
Well, we also set up, I think you guys set up a special link for our audience too. If they, we'll put it up here on the screen and a QR code too, if people want to just scan it and sign up and claim your spot. I don't know how many spots you have available for this trading summit. But if they go to redactedtrading.com, I think that's the website you guys set up for people to take advantage of that. And again, the QR code on the screen, and people just click on it and then reserve their spot and they can join you on either March 5th or March 7th, right?
Yes, sir. We've got a 1,000-seat spot for each day that we can have. And like you said, if you click the QR code, it's absolutely free. We want to do that for you and your audience. Come join us and you will walk away time well spent.
That's great. And is there any other ways that people can learn? I know you guys have had, I think you guys have had significant trades over the years, over this past year in 2025. Can you just talk about your win rate? Because you and I were talking offline. I think you guys had a 78% win rate last year in 2025 with your students.
For our swing trade call out. So one of the things that we do with our students is I'm a big believer in tell you, show you, do it with you. Because my hope for people is that they learn this skill and they don't just rely on me. So I want to teach people a skill set. And so we have trading rooms live where we're on a Zoom call, showing charts, looking at opportunities, answering questions. And last year we called out about 141 trades, which sounds like a lot. It does sound like a lot, but out of that we had over a 78% win rate on those trades we called out.
That's
and
great.
We had people make phenomenal returns their first year ever really engaging the market. And that is our hope. That's what we want to do is we want to empower people to take your finances in your own hands, because no one's coming to save us. Yeah. It's going to be up to you to learn how to do it. And then you can make that money and use it to help fund your own freedom. That's why it's called the Freedom Trading Summit.
Awesome. I love it. And I love that you guys have a trading floor where you guys are all like students are in a Zoom call with you and you're watching these charts. I think that's really phenomenal. So really, really great stuff. So, all right, here it is on the screen again. If people want to take advantage of it and start to educate themselves on this, redactedtrading.com, and then scan the QR code as well if you want to and jump in and join Mark and the team from NEOS on March 5th or March 7th. So any final thoughts here, Mark, about where you see this economy going in 2026?
It makes me nervous. I'm going to say that. I think 2026 has some different opportunities to be fantastic. And we see a booming economy. I also see the opportunities for us to get into a war with Iran, start depleting a lot of our investments, and it go the other way. And so a lot of this, I'm going to use the word unfortunately, is on the shoulders of our leaders. Having said that, I'm optimistic because one of the things that we know how to do is profit in either direction.
That's so key. Yeah.
That's one of the things we're going to show you guys how to do. And in those times of decline, it does make some of the best buying opportunities that you can have. And if you know some of the things we'll teach you on the summit, we'll actually show you how to make money if it does drop as well.
Wonderful. Mark, great to see you. Thank you so much for this. And we'll have links to everything we talked about in the description if people want to dive more deeply into this and educate themselves. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you, Clayton.